From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
A new era has begun at the Catholic News Agency, even as the news cycle continues to bring challenging stories both inside the church and around the world. This week on Register Radio, we get to know Shannon Mullen, the new editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. And then we are joined by Register DC correspondent Loretta Brown to catch up on the latest pro-life news from the nation's capital. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register, your host on Register Radio. I'm especially happy to be in studio in Washington, D.C. with my co-host, Matthew Bunsen.
It's great to be with you and to have you here. We sort of have a full house at the moment in D.C., so it's a welcome change.
Exactly. I think it's been nearly 2 years since I've been here in studio due to COVID and all of the events of the last couple years, but it is a real pleasure to be here. And also, very exciting to be joined in studio as well by Shannon Mullen, the new editor-in-chief of the Catholic News Agency. Shannon, welcome.
Thank you, Jeanette. It's great to be here.
So we're kind of catching you, right at the start here. It's been trial by fire. You've been in the job for less than 2 weeks, but you're a welcome part of this EWTN News team. How has your experience been so far?
Well, as you know, there's been a lot of news.
Just a little news this week, huh?
When I met the staff last week, I started by saying, so what have I missed? Any big news in the Catholic Church?
There's
a lot going on, yes.
Yes. You were telling me as we were getting to know one another yesterday on our first meeting that you were, in flight when all of this news about surveillance broke and all of that interesting stuff that CNA was writing about. And, of course, we've had the motu proprio and all of the interesting takes on that. So these weeks have been full. And besides, you have a very big staff. You've got, a couple, I don't know, maybe 20 reporters reporting to you, editors and reporters. So it's a pretty nice-sized team that you have to get to know.
It's a great team, and yes, they're in Rome. They're in different parts in Europe. CNA has journalists in Africa and Germany and really all over the world. So it's a tremendous opportunity, and it's a great team to work with.
Well, we've got you here because we want to get to know you. We want our audience, our listeners, to know who you are, where you come from. You've been in the news business for more than 30 years, basically local reporting mostly, for mainstream media. Your career includes 10 years as an investigative reporter, which that's a wonderful asset to bring to us. An enterprise editor, content coach with Gannett Company. And the paper, as I understood it, is the Asbury Park Press. And this is where in New Jersey?
Well, it's Bruce Springsteen's hometown newspaper. So that gives you a little bit of reference. We're right in the heart of Springsteen country. It's at the Jersey Shore, sort of the central New Jersey Shore. So we have a lot of beachfront communities, and it's a very, dynamic place.
Not a small Catholic community either, huh?
No. New Jersey is got a really vibrant Catholic community.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I want to talk a little about that past, those 30 years in journalism and what your focuses were over those years and what you bring with all that experience to EWTN.
Yeah, I had a very wide-ranging experience, and I never really had, as a journalist, I never really had the luxury, I guess you could say, of specializing in one topic. So for a lot of my career, I was what we would call a general assignment reporter, which basically means you have to become an instant expert and any kind of topic that might confront you on a daily basis. So that's a great position to be in as a journalist because it's always different, but it's also stressful because you're constantly being thrust into issues and controversies that you might not have a real deep background on. And as an investigative journalist, again, very wide-ranging, my team got into property taxes and guardianship abuses of the elderly and deplorable rental housing situations in New Jersey and nationwide. So it was really very wide-ranging.
Absolutely. And I know part of your experience included being a finalist in the Pulitzer Prize Awards. That's quite an accomplishment, quite a recognition. So we are thrilled for that experience here. And, of course, there's got to be a story of why this 30-year veteran in the news business comes over to a Catholic network. Why are you turning to Catholic journalism now?
Really, two reasons, two main reasons. The first is Mother Angelica. She's had a tremendous impact on me as a young Catholic, as a young reporter. My wife and I started watching Mother Angelica 33 years ago when we were married. And EWTN, I mean, as you know, Mother Angelica always referred to her listeners and viewers as her family.
Right.
And so, yes, 30 years, I felt very much a part of that family with Father Mitch and Raymond Arroyo and all these personalities at EWTN. So she's a big reason while I'm here, because I felt a part of that family for a long time, like a lot of Catholics around the world. And now it's even a deeper relationship. I guess the second reason is I'm a journalist. I'm always looking for great stories. And I think the biggest story in the world right now is really the Catholic Church, not only as an institution, but Catholics around the world are really – it's a pivotal time for us. And I really feel that we're all being sort of asked that question that Jesus asked, who do you say that I am? As a church and as individuals, you know, we're being asked to really confront the culture and really work out and struggle with the answer to that question. So it's a really big news story that I see that is CNA's mission.
So you're transitioning now, or have transitioned from secular journalism to sort of Catholic journalism. What do you see are some of the challenges and even some of the landmines of being a Catholic journalist?
Yeah, it would be great to answer that question about a month from now, because
we'll bring you back.
You're right, though. It is a big transition, and CNA and Alejandro Bermudez, who's my boss and my mentor. Right off the bat, I can really sense that CNA has an evangelistic mission. And I appreciate that, and I'm very respectful of that. And then at the same time, we have journalistic standards that we have to uphold. And so it is a unique role in journalism.
You know, going back to the inspirations for you as a Catholic, and maybe encouraging you to get into Catholic journalism even now, as you kind of reflected on a job change and all of this. You mentioned in the news story that Catholic News Agency did about your arrival that John Paul II was a bit of an inspiration. How so?
Well, you know, as a journalist and as a young journalist, I was very accustomed to media bashing and, in some cases, well-deserved. But the media, being sort of not a well-respected profession. And John Paul held World Communication Day, I think it was called. And I was very aware of that, because here was this person that I, was greatly admired, John Paul II, and he was talking about journalism as a vocation.
Right.
And that really elevated it in my mind and sort of raised the bar, as it were, in sort of the standards that I wanted to follow as a journalist.
You know, Shannon, I can identify with you there. I worked for a long time at different archdioceses, two, one in New Orleans, one in Denver. And we used to hold World Communication Days and invite the local journalists to come and pray for a day and just to have a reception and to mingle, really. And it was a great thing because while we have that sometimes that disposition towards media, you know, and especially the national media, I mean, media now has changed so much, but lots of times the local reporters of your local television stations or, you know, newspapers, many of them are Catholic, you know?
Right.
And they're trying to make a living, and they're not trying to, you know, always get the Pulitzer, you know, but they're usually just trying to tell the story. And many of them, like I said, are Catholic, and they need to be reached out to because maybe they've lost their faith, you know, and can be invited back. And so those World Communication Days were, I think, really important opportunities. So it's interesting that you talk about that because I would have been the person at the Archdiocese inviting you,
okay,
you know, 10 years ago or so to that Mass and to have that experience. And so very, very, very interesting. You know, we talk about St. John Paul II, right? Do you have a favorite saint, a patron saint?
He is one of them for sure. I just his story, his witness is really, I would probably put him number one. Also, St. Thomas More is a big one for me. And, of course, St. Patrick. I am Irish. There's no secret to that.
Is your name Irish?
My middle name is Patrick also. And so, yeah, those three are the biggies for me.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I guess I want to leave with a little tease. You know, it's only your second week, and I hate to ask this question, but what can we expect from the new editor-in-chief, Shannon Mullen, at Catholic News Agency?
Well, again, coming from a secular background, I look at Catholic News Agency as sort of the Associated Press of the Catholic world. So known for being fast, for being first, for being global, for having boots on the ground. So that's going to continue. That's first and foremost its primary mission. I think looking forward, I think it's important that the true, the good, and the beautiful, right? That's what we're all about. And I think we need to hear some good news, you know?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
I think there's going to be some good news that we're going to want to share too. And finally, Mother Angelica, her strength was really talking to people where they are, meeting them where they are, real people, real problems. And, you know, I'm encouraging the staff to develop those sources and to write stories about ordinary Catholics. We do a great job on the magisterium, on the hierarchy, on the institutional church. But I want to emphasize from the onset those types of stories as well.
You know, and in our conversations, you've said how part of your heart and your experience has been coaching journalists, mentoring them. And I think that's awesome, especially in light of what you said about Pope John Paul, you know, saying that this is a vocation. And a Catholic journalist, I think, has a very unique vocation. And I look forward to seeing, you know, how you coach your journalists and where you lead Catholic News Agency.
Thank you, and I just ask everyone to pray for me, but also for the staff of CNA.
Absolutely, we will do that. And our listeners can read more about Shannon Mullen and Catholic News Agency and his plans at ncregister.com. We've got a story, EWTN's Catholic News Agency names Shannon Mullen as editor-in-chief. When we come back, we'll be talking to Loretta Brown about the latest pro-life news. This is Register Radio on EWTN. Stay tuned for more.
In these uncertain times, Catholics depend on EWTN's National Catholic Register. The Register is so much more than a newspaper. It's your faith, your life, your source of information and spiritual resources. The Register is uplifting, redemptive journalism, interviews with Catholic leaders and newsmakers, liturgical coverage, health, financial, and political topics, and analysis of the key issues you care most about. EWTN's National Catholic Register covers covers every aspect of the Catholic faith that impacts your world. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I am in the Washington, D.C. Bureau with Matthew Bunsen, my co-host, and also Loretta Brown is here in the D.C. studio. Loretta is our Washington, D.C. correspondent, the national correspondent for the Register, which means she deals with all the political news in our nation's capital, but also the news of the church, you know, throughout the United States and pro-life news throughout the United States. Often her beat includes pro-life state legislation. And right now there's a lot to watch for in the fight for the unborn. And so, Loretta, recently you covered a new approach to legislation down in Texas, and it's a heartbeat bill. It's called the Heartbeat Act, and Texas Governor Greg Abbott signed it into law, I think, in May. What will this law do?
This law, it bans abortion after the heartbeat is detected, which is about 6 weeks of pregnancy. And in that way, it's like a lot of other bills that I think we've seen in the states in the pro-life movement in the past few years. That kind of draw that line once a heartbeat is detectable, which is quite early on in the pregnancy. But
right.
And so under this law, you know, a doctor who perform an abortion doctor would face penalties, and anyone who assists in the abortion would, but not the woman. But it's interesting because it's a unique approach. Actually, they're trying out a new legal approach in terms of enforcement.
Okay.
So what is unique here is that it excludes the state from enforcement. So the private citizens can sue the the abortion doctor, people involved in it, assisting with the abortion, and that's how it's enforced, is through these private lawsuits, which is just very new and interesting. And the way the law's proponents described it to me was talking about, in order for there to be a violation of the supposed constitutional right to abortion that often is how these abortion providers fight against these laws. In order for that violation to even be there, the government has to restrict or take away that right. But the government's not involved here. These are, civil actions from these private citizens. And so it's these pre-enforcement challenges that Planned Parenthood often does and these other abortion providers do, saying, right away, this law is unconstitutional, they block it from going into effect at all, that wouldn't be as feasible. And this actually worked in one instance in Lubbock, Texas.
Let's stop. We'll talk about Lubbock in a minute. Let's unpack that a little bit because that's really interesting. So as we know, there are these heartbeat legislation around the country, right? So several states have tried this. And then what happens is, as soon as the governor signs this, basically they get sued,
right,
by Planned Parenthood. So as soon as it's signed into law, the law never goes into effect because Planned Parenthood sues the state, and therefore there's the law, never gets enacted, basically, because it's tied up in the courts for sometimes years. If it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, it's years that it's tied up. And so this is what we've learned from those who are advocating this type of legislation, is that that's Planned Parenthood's strategy. The way we'll defeat these pro-life bills, which, by the way, are from your people, listeners, you've elected these officials who have created these laws, right?
Right, yeah.
This is through the democratic process. Mm-hmm. We've got these laws. And what happens? Planned Parenthood sues so that the law can't go into effect. Texas seems pretty brilliant right now in the fact that they're trying to bypass that whole process. right?
Exactly, exactly. And the reason I, brought up Lubbock was because so far now, it seems to be working. So you mentioned like Planned Parenthood sues right away. In this instance too, Planned Parenthood has a lawsuit, right? And it's named, but they actually even had difficulty naming who they were suing in this law. They named, state officials that might be involved in some way, but they also named, this pro-life activist who had said he would be open to suing over an abortion. He'd said that in the media at one point because they are kind of at a loss of, they don't want to just get thrown out of the, dismissed, from the court because they're so used to just going this normal route of suing the government and blocking this. So, so with Lubbock, they outlawed all abortions within the city limits and with this same enforcement from citizens. And what happened there is they actually did prevent the Planned Parenthood there for now from performing abortions because it went into effect. The lawsuit happened. The judge dismissed it over, the court lacks jurisdiction with the way, they weren't suing the people that would be bringing the lawsuits. Planned Parenthood wasn't. So that's why I'm saying, you're right. It's very creative. It looks like it worked in that instance, at least.
Right. And sounds like a lot of other states are watching. Pro-lifers in other states are watching to see what happens. Are you aware, have there been private citizens who have sued an abortion doctor yet?
Not that I'm aware of, no, because this is all relative. Like what I bring up in Lubbock was that went into effect in June, and then the Planned Parenthood facility there, while they're filing the motion to reconsider, are redirecting their, their clientele to Dallas, and this other. This would go into September, effect in September.
We have until September.
It's very much a wait and see thing. But there are a lot of people watching, as you say. Yeah, there are other states seeing, this is an interesting approach. Can we use this?
Right. Well, so the biggest player here, and we talked about their very aggressive agendas, is Planned Parenthood, right? And we're always watching what Planned Parenthood is doing, and it feels like Planned Parenthood and the pro-life movement has this this dance, one step forward and two steps back, sometimes depending on who's president, I suppose. But you wrote this week about a report that came out,
right,
that details Planned Parenthood's federal funding they've received. I mean, it's in the millions. Who produced this report and what does it tell us?
Yeah, so this report was from the Government Accountability Office, which is the nonpartisan research arm of Congress, and it was kind of a deeper look into the federal funding that Planned Parenthood spends, and it was requested by pro-life members of Congress, and pro-life members of Congress often sort of request this sort of thing. But what it found was that they spent $271 million, in federal money from fiscal years 2016 to 2018, and one interesting thing I noted right off the bat there was that the funding levels each of those years, they weren't really affected by the transition from the Obama to the Trump administration. And that's just partly, I think, because of, this sort of funding is often allocated years in advance. But also, the Trump administration didn't have a lot of success with defunding Planned Parenthood across the board. They had the Title X defunding, but that was a battle, So it was interesting for me just to see how much of this funding Planned Parenthood was still getting in this time period, and it's such a substantial amount. And another thing is that does just keep increasing. Like the Family Research Council they have a website now tracking this funding, and it was interesting to look at that. They sort of looked at the data from GAO reports, but also Planned Parenthood annual reports, and they found that in the 25 years between 1994 and 2019, Planned Parenthood has gotten $9.7 billion in taxpayer funding. That's just like what, just in that time period, what they've themselves have reported as well. And what Planned Parenthood has. And so that's just like a lot of money. And Planned Parenthood has has talked about how, you know, the restrictions on the federal funding they receive. But a point that, you know, Congressman Chris Smith makes and others have made is just this is fungible. You know, you kind of know that this is freeing up money in other areas.
Right. I mean, there are accounting tricks being played,
yeah.
And that's what we see here. I do want to point our listeners to your articles online where they can read more about this and they can find out more about the Family Researchers tracking website. That's very interesting. So the blog that you wrote is Planned Parenthood spent $271 million in federal funding from 2016 to 2018, report reveals. The story you wrote on Texas heartbeat bill is called Texas Heartbeat Act Would Be Enforced by Lawsuits from Private Citizens. But Matthew, you wanted to jump in with one last question.
Before we let you go,
yes.
Speaking of Planned Parenthood, Lena Wen, the former president of Planned Parenthood, has gotten some more attention again, as she seems want to do since leaving Planned Parenthood. What's the story there?
Yeah, so she's written this book, and she really kind of opens up about some of the things she faced while she was head of Planned Parenthood, one of which was just a constant pressure to bring up abortion, to emphasize abortion. And she comes from the perspective of she wanted to talk about the broad range of healthcare services, which she believed included abortion. You know, abortion was part of that holistic health outreach. That was her view. But she was constantly being, you know, reminded and warned and pressured by colleagues, by the board. I mean, this ultimately led to her departure, but she really talks about this in the book about she would do an interview and then get texts saying, you should have mentioned abortion. You need to mention abortion every interview, you know, and say they would say it's stigmatizing for you to avoid this. When really, I think many people would have kind of appreciated her approach of, you know, seeing it in maybe a range of healthcare services, but the emphasis there is just she's, you know, very pro-abortion, but even for her, Planned Parenthood was
over the top.
Yes.
Yeah. So we see again, I use the word aggressive, and we certainly are seeing a very aggressive agenda. And you know, you wanted to get her book and try to understand better where she's coming from, because I would expect there are many people who fall in the range that she is that doesn't want something so aggressive. And so I look forward to seeing what you find when you read that book. It's always good to know how the other side thinks, and I think it's an important part of your job. So, Loretta, thanks so much. It's awesome to be in studio with you.
Thanks so much for having me. This is wonderful.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.